This is a Cyber Union talk show for Friday, February 24th, 2012. Z-Social on par contradiction.
Hello and welcome to Cyber Unions. I'm Walton in Glasgow, Scotland, and with me is...
Stephen in Mexico City. How are you doing, Walton?
I'm not bad. It's been a bit of a hard adjustment coming back to cold, grey, rainy skies and concrete after the sunshine of Cape Town, but the charming local people have helped smooth the way and... Yeah, I'm back in the saddle and things are going well. How are you?
Good, good. It's actually nice to finally have a regular show. It's kind of a hard thing to define anymore because all our shows have been crazy lately. But it's nice to actually have the chance to catch up and trying to see where things are for each other and going from there. But things are going well here. I've been very active with a lot of different social movements and a lot of activism going on down here that I never even fathomed when I was in Boston or when I was in Guatemala. Mm-hmm. So it's been overwhelming to a certain extent. I've had people say to me on a regular basis, your schedule's quite full. And it's true. The funny thing is I'm not earning any money. So
yeah, that is an unfortunate detail, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's fun though. There's a lot of new things I've been learning. There's been a lot of fun stuff. There's an event this week that I'm doing with May 1st that's going to be doing video streaming. So I get to participate in that and learned already how to do Icecast video streaming, which with a FireWire camera, which you don't hear about often anymore because they stopped really making them, which is good in one sense, but because they're cheap, but they're also really easy to set up to do really awesome high quality video streaming. So anyhow, we're gonna be doing that on Friday. That'll be a lot of fun. Other than that, it's been a lot of things on our site, I guess you could say. But before we go into that, I mean, is there any stuff that you want to...
Actually, just that Icecast stuff is quite interesting. I'd like to learn more about it. Can you just give me a bit of an overview of how it works and what it is and what you can do with it?
Well, so it's a little bit hardware intensive in one sense, because you can do it on one computer, but it's good to have two computers, which there's some instructions on the May 1st website that I can put links into on how to do it. But if you remember, FireWire is this really high speed connections. In a lot of cases, it's used for external hard drives, but also for video cameras. And we're using a digital video camera, a small one, that just connects to one computer that is taking in the feed. And that takes up a good amount of resources, but it can be done on older computers, which is good because older computers tend to have FireWire on them. And then that feed directly connects to another computer that is connected to the internet, that is sending it to the Icecast server and converting it into an OGG form. So it's taking a raw video data, converting it into OGG form, and then streaming it to a website. It's actually really not that hard. I had a couple technical glitches, which was that the FireWire cable we were initially using was not strong enough for the feed, so I couldn't get the feed going. But then what was really cool is with this thing called DV Switch, which is a program that you can get in the Debian repositories, you can actually do picture in picture. So you can have multiple feeds coming in and you can play with the screen settings on what that looks like. You can change the audio connection. So it could be you could have two cameras set up at the same time connecting to the server and you could play with which one has the audio, or you could play like some background music while people are watching the video or whatever. So it's really pretty cool. It's great for like conferences and meetings to stream to other people, and you can watch it right in your web browser. That's what we're able to do. But you can also use things like VLC to stream it too, for much better quality, I think, at least.
Okay. Well, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
So what's the big news on Cyber Unions?
So we talked about this a long time ago. I don't remember when, but we had always wanted to start our own StatusNet instance. And so over your honeymoon, Ross from May 1st and I were able to put it together, and it's been up for a little while now, but it's not we haven't really customized it to look like the Cyber Union's website, but we can do that with a lot of CSS controls. I just don't know how to do that personally, so I haven't really played with it, and I was hacking around with it a lot, and there are a lot of different plugins that we can do, like currently it's just bare bones. We don't have that many things set up, but we could add a Twitter bridge. And there's a lot of testing that we can put through, connections to Facebook, connections to, XMPP. So you could actually just have, instead of having to go to the webpage, you could have it as like an instant messenger buddy, that just notifies you when you're getting responses, or you can actually control that. So there's a lot of cool little things that I've been playing with on it. And right now it's invite only because I don't want to go through the craziness of dealing with spam. But I think it's a place that we could actually invite, our listeners to, if they want to join, definitely send us an email if you want to join, and we'd be able to correspond with whether on sending those offers off. But it's cool. It's a little fun little thing to do, and I set the character limit instead of 240 characters to 1,200.
Oh, okay.
So
it's not really microblogging then, is it?
No. It's just. I mean, and I can
maxi blogging.
Yeah, and I can change that if I want to. And we can collectively make that decision. It's just there's so many times that I just keep writing, and I hate that limitation of like thinking about the character limit. And honestly, like as much as people are connecting via their smartphones and everything like that, not many people are using SMS when it comes to Identica or really Twitter, in my opinion. Most people have the web because it's cheaper. And even here in Mexico, most people have the web. They don't actually pay for their SMS as much, at least some of the people that I know. But yeah, so 1,200 characters, it's not too bad. It's a nice round number. I was trying to find a good radical number, but I couldn't actually think of one off the top of my head that I'd pick. But
you mean you're not an expert in socialist numerology?
Unfortunately, no. I'm not a mathematician, which is odd because I'm a huge fan of Futurama, which is full of math examples and everything. So, but no, unfortunately not. So, but it's fun. It'll be cool to see how we set this up because with it we can actually do private settings, so we could keep it just to the StatusNet point. Sorry, I keep saying it in Spanish, cyberunions.org. And just for the people that are on there would see the messages if you click the private feature or within groups and things like that. So I just like the idea because it's a good experiment of showing what other unions and social movements can do very easily, because it really was not that hard of an install. Took a little bit of hacking, but at least with the May 1st community, they were exceptionally helpful in getting it all up and running. That's the big news. Good. So check out Status.
Good, fantastic.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes for it and start conversing on there. I know you're on Twitter more, so I'll have to get the Twitter bridge up for you.
Yeah, yeah. So while I was drinking champagne on a beach somewhere, you were elbows deep in code.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. That's a division of labor that I'm entirely comfortable with.
Well, to be fair, I will say that I have been spoiling myself with bottles of wine. So so it hasn't been just you enjoying your champagne in lovely South Africa and enjoying these lovely photos that you shared with me. I am envious of your trip, but I will say that I did get things going while you were enjoying your time.
Good.
So, anyhow, I think that's about it on updates on my end and on yours. I think there was some stuff that you had sent me via email about Labor Start, if you want to jump into there.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the annual Labor Start survey of trade union use of the internet. The reason it's kind of important is that Labor Start's really the first or the only people who are researching this in any kind of detail. Most listeners probably know what Labor Start is. It's probably the first and oldest project of using the internet to connect trade unionists. It's been around since the late 90s. And essentially what it does is it aggregates trade union stories from around the world and organizes campaigns, which usually involve emailing companies that are doing bad things and complaining, with a fair amount of success. Labor Start has a really big database of users and people who are interested. There are, you know, thousands of people around the world, so it's a useful network. And I think last year was the first Labor Start survey, and at the time that the survey was conducted, which is beginning of last year, I was also researching trade union use of the internet, so it was actually really useful for me because there was a whole bunch of data. And LabourStart released all the raw data, and I analyzed it, and I used it in my dissertation, and it was useful because there were 1,336 respondents. It was a good chunk of data, and it gave me a picture on what trade union activists were saying about their use of the internet. They just did the survey now, January and early February. They've done it again, and this time there's more than double the number of respondents, 2,954. So quite a significant number of people. It makes it a survey that's worth paying attention to. I mean, obviously it's people who have self-selected, who are interested in this kind of stuff, who are answering the survey, but still it's quite a big group of people. So I was thinking of just going through some of what the survey tells us, because it's telling us where trade union activists are, or at least the ones who are active on the internet, the kind of stuff that they're interested in what they're doing. So just to go over it quickly, firstly, the survey was in English and French. So the responses are from English and French speaking countries.
Ah, I see. need to work on a Spanish one.
Yeah. Also, and then this is kind of in order of size, the responses were UK, Canada, USA, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, France, and Belgium.
Okay.
So those are all rich countries. Mm-hmm. So not a lot of response from developing countries, which isn't really surprising, but it does tell us that the survey tells us what trade unionists in developed countries are using, and it's not an overview of the technology that trade unionists generally are using to connect, and that's a whole other survey. The other thing worth mentioning is that I'm not looking at the raw data. I'm just looking at the LabourStart blog. They haven't released the raw data for this yet. They might. I don't know. I hope they do, because it's useful information. One of the key changes is that the way trade union activists access the web has changed quite significantly over the past year. And that is, there is now a big jump in people using smartphones and tablets to access the net. It's, if you can believe it, 14% of trade union activists are using tablets and 41% are using smartphones. So It just shows that those are actually pretty important platforms, and that websites which trade unions use for campaigns need to be accessible and readable on smartphones. So quite important. Nice to see the continued decline of Internet Explorer.
Nice.
It is still the biggest browser, but it's on 63%, whereas Firefox is on 45. So that's good news. Less good news is the fact that, no surprise, the biggest social network is Facebook, with sort of 90-odd trade unionists are using Facebook, which is not surprising because kind of everyone is using it.
Mm-hmm.
Bizarrely, a huge rise in the use of LinkedIn, which I find quite surprising, but it's popular. And Twitter is also popular. And that is actually quite a big jump, because when I analyzed last year's data, what was really interesting was reading through the comments and seeing there was a huge amount of negativity towards Twitter. My own view on where that was coming from is that there'd been a lot of negative coverage from the old media, who don't like new media because they see it making them irrelevant. And people seem to have internalized that. And there were a lot of people who didn't understand what it was, and were convinced it was a mechanism set up by their company to monitor them, and they were completely opposed to it. That doesn't seem to be really prevalent now. 37% of trade unionists said that they use Twitter. And then significantly less, well, quite a few using YouTube. And then, Second Life has fallen away dramatically. Very few people are using Second Life, Bebo, Orkut, MySpace, and other sites like that. Interestingly, Google Plus has a fairly high usage amongst French speakers. And Google Plus is actually quite useful. Without wanting to push Google products, it is actually quite easy to use. And because of the Hangouts feature, you could have an online video conference with other trade unionists that doesn't cost you anything. So, it has some utility there, and it's probably worth exploring for some people.
It's also worth encouraging our developers out there that are in the free software movement to start working on the free software version that's going to be beating Google Plus. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, go on.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and then also people are reporting that their unions massively use Facebook. 90% of unions are on Facebook. 42% of them are on Twitter. 24% of them are on YouTube. 10% on Union Book. And kind of goes down from there. Some questions about whether people use the National Union website. Obviously, most unions have websites, and most trade unionists visit the website sometimes, and they think it's okay.
Hmm.
They don't rate the websites terribly highly. Same kind of information with branch. You know, about 50% of union branches have a website. People visit sometimes, and they think it's okay. There are very, very small numbers of smartphone apps for unions. There are a few, and very few people are using it. So that is an area that hasn't really been developed. Labor Starts say they have developed an iPhone app, and it's currently been submitted to Apple for approval, and what's it called? The App Store have Apple?
The App Store.
So once it passes the Apple police, it'll be in the App Store, and it'll be interesting to see how the Labor Start app takes off, because Labor Start is an organization with a big reach. So if anyone can kind of publicize an app, it would be them, and it'll be a worthwhile experiment to see if it works. Email newsletters, lots of unions use them. People think they're very useful, and people also like multimedia content, so sort of podcasts and videos. What is quite interesting is there was a question asked about what sites do you think are useful for trade union activists, and they didn't. The list wasn't exhaustive, but they asked, for example, ILO, International Labour Organization.
Yeah.
Not massively popular with trade unionists, not surprisingly, because it's a bit abstract, the stuff on there. 34% of trade union activists think ILO is a useful website. 95% of them think Labor Start is useful. And most other websites, tragically, Cyber Unions wasn't listed. It wasn't one of the options. a number of other websites kind of fell off. And interestingly, the decline of Union Book seems to have been quite dramatic. I think 2011 survey, 48% of activists said that Union Book was useful. This time it's only 22%. So quite a big drop off of people who think Union Book is useful. And that got me thinking about another social network that we came across last week called Z Social. And I know you've been taking a look at it. So what are your views on Z Social?
Yeah, well, I guess we'll kind of jump from the stats stuff into a bit of tech stuff here. Union Book, the problem I had with Union Book is it was developed on closed source technology, and it wasn't connecting to other networks. And yes, my impression about how things should be connected or could be better connected is influenced by Identica because of their O status feature, which allows them to connect through different networks. And Google Buzz, when it was around, was actually connected to and utilizing the O status feature, and Diaspora is developing with it. But Z Social kind of struck me as interesting because of where it was coming from. Z Social is the social network put out by Z Communications, which some people, if they're not familiar with it, we'll put a link in the show notes for it. But one person that's very well known that's on Z Communications is Michael Albert, who wrote the book Participatory Economics, or Perry Econ, or Paracon, I guess. Not sure exactly how you pronounce it, which was an experimental piece on trying to describe what the economy could look like after capitalism. And he wrote a follow-up book called Realizing Hope, which is Life Beyond Capitalism, as the Perry Econ book went into a very good amount of detail of, I guess you could say, the abstract of what a workplace would look like. And it was really kind of interesting. So when Z Social was coming out, or when I heard about it from the email, I went and checked it out and was trying to figure out what it was being developed on, what software is being developed on, and what the licensing was. And maybe that's just my knee-jerk reaction, but I couldn't find any information on that. And it kind of surprised me because part of the Perry Econ model is really, it's not the same, but it's very, very similar to the idea of a worker-run cooperative. And democracy in the workplace, one person, one vote, and taking into account community impact and everything else. So it kind of surprised me that there was not a place for somebody who's not a developer, but even a developer, I guess you could say, no place for them to participate. And so I didn't want to jump to conclusions, so I kind of researched some more stuff on it and came across an article that was written back in, I think, August or sometime in the summer of last year, that Albert wrote on Facebook is a disease and Z Social is medicine, which was an interesting article, and I'll put a link in the show notes because it's the comments that really got to me. The article was well articulated, talking about Facebook being this popular thing and the problems with the privacy issues and all this other stuff that we all know about Facebook and reasons that some of us choose not to use it. The idea of Z Social as the medicine kind of struck me as kind of odd because I was like, well, what's so good about Z Social? So,
it's a bit kind of arrogant, maybe, statement. Yeah?
It does come across that way. The content of the article, I do encourage people to read it just to understand what they're going after, and that maybe the title is to raise concern and get people to read it. Who knows? But the attitude that the article takes isn't as bad, but then it kind of celebrates Z Social as this great thing. Now, just in hindsight of things, looking at summer of last year to now, a lot of things have changed. But things had been existing beforehand that Z Social did not take advantage of, at least in my opinion, because I can't tell. There's no information on it. I created an account on Z Social, and lo and behold, it looks exactly like Facebook. And you can connect to it through Facebook. So it's just like, all right, this isn't, I mean, it's nothing new. Diaspora, you can connect through Facebook, and Identica, you can connect through Facebook, but, you don't have to, and you don't have to with Z Social either. You can create your own. But the idea that he puts behind it is that it's kind of a leftist version of Facebook, or a face left, as he wrote in the article. What strikes me as odd is that I was expecting, especially for Z Communications, to be utilizing free software. And it wasn't. At least it's not clear if it is, because if they are, they're not in compliance because they're not sharing it. And they're not. There's no Creative Commons license at the bottom like you see on our page and on other pages that are very radical of utilizing the Creative Commons license. So there's limited information. So it required me to rely on interviews that I had seen and comments that even Michael Albert had made, because he seems to be the head figure on talking about Z Social and the idea behind it. So I'll put a link again in the show notes for this video that I came across by somebody who is connected with the tech community. And what really struck me as, and really quite honestly pissed me off, is the perspective that Michael Albert takes. For a person of his background, and for stuff that I've read a number of his books and know a number of his articles, it strikes me as very odd for his generalizations and assumptions that he's made about the free software community.
What do you mean? What is he saying?
Well, so in the comments section, which again I'll put the link in the show notes, somebody had asked, saying, "Well, why isn't free software being embraced in this situation?" And the person who commented utilized the term open source, which bothers me because open source is the terms that the corporations want you to use. It's taking the politics out of free software, and free software, utilizing the terms free software, again, people confuse it with like free as in free beer. No, it's free as in freedom, and free as in freedom is a political statement, and it's a political stance to take, and it's not apolitical, which is exactly how the comment was made, and then Michael Albert agreed to it, saying quite literally that the open source community is apolitical and they're militant about it, and they've made mistakes because they look at this narrow thing about ownership of a small piece of software and a small piece of programming, which in my experience, and he even puts it in his experience, but if he's so well inclined to make such a generalization about utilizing free software, that's not a good definition, in my opinion. It's not a good definition of what the community is. And he tries to explain that the open source community is not radical. They're not leftist. They're not against capitalism. And again, maybe it is my specific experience, but I've run into many people who are not happy with the system, many people who are exceptionally political, who are very active within the free software community and trying to bring about change. The conditions of their work are reasons enough for why they're doing it, is because they're sysadmins or they're developers that are getting underpaid and treated like crap. And it just, it really bothers me that, that Michael Albert would go out and make these generalizations about a community and saying that, oh, the people he's emailed about politics, oh, they never responded. And even in the video interview, the person's like, well, maybe it's a matter of your choice of terminology. Because, and he was alluding to the terms of open source, but he didn't get to make that point of free software. And the reason I bring that up is because Michael Albert is one person who will never say the term socialism. And he has said that the term has been negatively portrayed because of the Soviet Union model and everything else. Mm-hmm. So he has gone out to utilize new terms. Does not use the radical terms that we all use. Or not we all use, but many of us use, myself included.
So Paracon is his kind of idea of socialism, is it?
Well, some could parallel it to that. He will never say that. He just says it's a different mode of production, and it's not the capitalist mode of production. And that's his, mm-hmm. his criticism, is the capitalist mode of production. And he even suggests and says that open source supports the capitalist system. And he's right. Certain parts and certain elements of open source development do support the capitalist system. I agree. But that doesn't mean the entire thing does, because the same generalization could be made about, you know, Perry Econ is like, well, technically it has to exist within capitalism, so it's supporting it. So, you know, it's just a matter that, at least in my perspective of that I take, which many here know, is dialectical materialism, is that in order to go beyond capitalism, we need to start building it within. And the examples that he even cites on perryecon.org's website are worker-run cooperatives, which we've talked about and advocate here. So it's surprising to me that he would portray a community that is very active and has been disregarded and is something that obviously we've been trying to connect with and bring together within the social movements and labor movements, that him lambasting it this way just pisses me off.
Yeah, and I also think there's a politics in the way the production happens. I mean, if you look at something like the Debian project, and Debian is probably one of the most well-developed of open source projects, and it coordinates the work of thousands of people around the world, and it doesn't have a explicit political statement where it says we make this software in order to liberate you from the evils of capitalism. But the fact that it's coordinating work in this way, and it has these you know, structures and ways of working which are open and so different from the way capitalism works, and that despite doing everything wrong, you know, according to the way capitalism and hierarchy works, manages to create a highly sophisticated project of software engineering, for me that is political. You know, there might not be an explicit politics which they articulate, but the fact that that project is successful in doing something, producing something sophisticated in a network way, in a mechanism that's very different from capitalism, there's something very political about doing that. And it shocks me that someone whose whole field of study is alternative ways of production can be completely blind to the way the free software movement is revolutionizing production by not just the people who create the software, but by giving away the tools for free. It's putting tools in the hands of people to create their own things. And, you know, in the days before free software, we wouldn't have been able to do this podcast, because we wouldn't have been able to afford the tools to communicate with each other. So, you know, the free software movement is enabling a whole different mode of production to come into being, a kind of peer production. And, you know, it's kind of right in front of him, and he's blind to it. You know, I had a look at Z-Social as well, and I didn't feel particularly welcomed by it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, and this is the biggest criticism of Z-Social itself, is that it's not doing anything different. Okay, so yes, now it's on the Z-Communication network. Great. So you're going to have a small little group of people who all agree that are going to be in the same place. And
left-wing ghetto.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, if he was really clearly understanding even the projects of Diaspora and Identica, that these are projects that already have people who are part of the left. but the thing is, it's also inclusive. And if we're going to try to be, you know, developing something that is different than Facebook, that is better than Facebook, because quite honestly, both Identica and Diaspora, in my opinion, even at this early stage, are better than Facebook, because they create a structure where, you know, exactly the same features that he wants in Z-Social, of no commercial advertising, no, you know, not concerned about your privacy data because it's not being held, to all these other things, it doesn't make any sense to go and start reinventing the wheel again when you haven't even tried to go with what's already existing and what's already being developed. And when you look at
the what's being developed openly, because that's the thing about Z Social, is that, you know, it's hard to find out exactly what's happening behind the scenes, whereas these other things are being developed in the public eye and anyone can have a look and anyone can contribute.
Exactly. And maybe perspectives are a little bit different within the community, but clearly, at least in my opinion, when I'm on Diaspora, at least maybe that's the people I'm following and the tags that I follow, but it's pretty darn radical. And there's not that much in the sign of like people that are like Facebook types that are going to be doing advertising. That's not accepted there. It's not part of their process, and it's part of the stuff that they try to get rid of. Same with like spam on Identica. It's like the best spam removal system ever. And it's part of the community developing. And if anything, it speaks exactly to Perry Econ, because Perry Econ's about connecting the as he says in the book, worker councils and community councils, determining what they each other need and what to produce. And you can't get anything better than that than in a free software development like structure of, and maybe it's just his perspective, and maybe he needs to go and understand and actually get involved in part of these communities. And I'm not saying I'm an expert, but in the last number of years that I've been getting involved in free software communities, and as much as it's not much, maybe beta testing of sorts, but I do understand the structure is not capitalist at all. And it's definitely very different. It's much more community driven. And if it weren't for the existence of those communities and me making the connections and you making the connections and other people making these connections, that there's a similarity of the movements within free software and the social movements that are trying to get rid of capitalism. I don't think we would be here creating the show at all if it weren't for that. So it just really bothers me that for an individual like him, who's done tremendous amount of research, who's been active in many social movements in the past, just shoots from the hip on this is it, and this is what the open source community is about, and that's it, and then just stops. And it's just like, well,
so I was going to say that's kind of probably why Union Book has dropped in popularity as well, is that it's the fact that it's isolated, it's a ghetto, and trade unionists don't only want to talk to trade unionists, they want to talk to everyone else as well, and no one is going to join an additional network. It sounds like, you know, you've feel a bit fired up about this and you put some thoughts into it. Maybe you could write something for us about it, kind of, you know, analyzing some of the ideas behind Paricon and how Z Social appears to fail to live up to these ideas. Do you think you'll have time to do that?
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. I probably should put this in writing. I think I will, actually. I think I'll try. I mean, it's just, I'm familiar enough with Paricon enough that I feel it's an appropriate critique, if anything. And it's not that I'm mad at Michael Albert. It's just that I'm, if anything, disappointed because of what he speaks about. And yeah, I mean,
you feel,
I guess,
like, you should know better.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, you know, it's the same reason why anybody on the left should be, you know, against paternalism and you know, sexism and things like that. It's part of the community. It's part of what we're fighting against, because everything else is taught to us differently. And you know, to not go to the extra length of learning about what these communities are and just shooting from the hip just pisses me off. It's not what we should be doing, and it's not constructive as a movement, in my opinion. But yeah, I think you're right. I think I should write about this.
Good.
All right. I think my rant is done.
Good.
which was quite extensive, but
help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer.
Why don't we get into lighter topics? We actually got some feedback. If you want to kind of share about our feedback that we got this week.
Yeah, we got a really, really interesting email from Kevin, and it really helps when we get emails, because, you know, sometimes you kind of do the show and not really sure if anyone's paying attention and cares about what we do. But Kevin wrote us a kind of really, really long and informative email with lots of really good ideas in it. Thank you. And if anyone else out there has some good ideas, please share them with us. Do you want to?
Yeah.
I see you've already responded to him. So, you know.
He actually raised some really good points and really good story about his background and everything else like that, which I'm not going to go into because that was, you know, the email and everything else. But he did raise a couple things. Two things, actually. One was what projects that we're going to be working on in the future, and if there's a way for him to participate, which raises the bigger question in our, and for both of us here, is how to build this community larger. In the response to him, I was suggesting that one of the things that you and I have been thinking about is trying to develop a forum structure so we can have a place for everybody to kind of regularly come to and develop comments and ideas and things that could turn into shows and everything like that. So we are going to look into vanilla forums as a GPL version of forums that's actually pretty cool looking. So that's one thing. The other thing that he proposed was for us to kind of do a segment, I'm not sure how often, but a little bit more focusing on philosophy. And he was citing some specific authors that actually I'm not familiar with all of them. I'm familiar with Fitch a little bit, but that being said, go on.
Yeah, the other one he mentions is Gilles Deleuze, who we mentioned once on a show way back, who's a French philosopher who wrote with a guy called Guattari, a book called Capitalism and Schizophrenia, and developed the idea of the rhizome versus the tree as an alternative organizing structure, basically talking about the power of the network and all that kind of thing. So quite an important philosopher if you can get your head around his abstract and arcane ideas. And that appeals to me because it adds, and I enjoy the ideology and philosophy and the kind of political discussions we have, as well as talking about the tech stuff. So I'm glad that someone else likes listening to that, and I guess we'll talk about some more of it.
Yeah, I think we could try to develop a segment, not on a weekly basis, but definitely trying to put some work together and suggested readings for people to listen to before getting to the show. But I think that's a really good idea. I really liked it. So Kevin, thank you very much, and really glad for your email, and encourage others to write as well, because it's always nice to hear, and we always want to hear where we can take the show and other things that you guys want us to talk about, or maybe we just talk about enough. I don't know. I'm not sure if I like hearing my voice when I do the editing. I'm surprised people actually like hearing my voice at all. So on that note, Walton, there's nothing else on my end, and I want to say to our listeners out there, we hope you join us again next week, and see you all later.
Mm-hmm. Thank you and good night.